Excuse me, Barry Cobjoin.
Thank you for standing by. I would like to inform all participants that this call is being recorded. Did you want me to do the roll call?
No, that's fine. Sharon, I'll do it. Thank you very much.
Go ahead. You may begin.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 9th of February, we have Alan Greenberg, Siva Mutusamy.
Excuse me, Mr. Michele Nalonshoin.
Sorry, Tatiana Kramsova, Cheryl Langdonor, Ron Wickersham, Helen Laverty, Mike O'Connor, Jeff Eckhouse, Ted Suzuki, Michael Pelage, Barry Cobb, Michele Nalon. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We also have apologies from Paul Diaz, Elaine Doolan, James Bladel, Mason Cole. I hope I haven't left anyone out. And if I could also please remind everyone to state your names before speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. Today we have a number of things on the agenda. After the discussion at our last meeting, Marika and I drafted a questionnaire trying to identify the various issues that we might, may, or may not want to try to address, if they are indeed issues related to the various aspects of domain exploration recovery. And Michele and Cheryl reviewed it quickly and both agreed it was basically what we had said we were going to do. So neither of them vetoed it or tore us apart for doing what we did. So I'd like to go over them right now and look at whether this is what we want to send out, whether it needs any refinement. Also on the agenda is to discuss who the target audience is for this. We know it's this group to begin with, but the question is, do we go any farther with that? And after that, there are a number of things that Mikey sent out that have generated a bit of comment on the web, and I think we need to email list, and I think we need to decide if we're going to do what we're going to do with these, if we're going to do anything as we go forward. Jeff.
Okay. Apologies in advance because I just want to be clear of something. The one that you had sent out that thankfully that you did in advance and we've all reviewed. Can you just say who is going to be the recipient of this survey?
That's item 3 on our agenda.
Okay. So then that's what I thought you said. So
certainly, this survey as it stands today is this working group. The question is, do we want to try to solicit answers to those basic questions from any other groups in the world?
Okay.
And if so,
what
do we do?
The reason I'm asking is because sometimes the questions themselves, do they make sense or to other people outside of this group since we're so deeply involved in what's going on? I wasn't sure who the audience was and who the responses would be from.
I think Michele's comment was, we would need to dumb down the questions. I think I said we needed to put some explanatory notes on them.
I was saying simplify.
Yes.
Same concept. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. As it is worded now, it's this group.
Okay, thank you.
And we have Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. And just to give some feedback as well, the thinking behind the survey and it's something we've been doing in some of the other working groups at a stage where we feel that we've had a lot of discussion, but, it's not really clear what people exactly said, or we feel that there is disagreement, or maybe there is more room for consensus that we think. We have a survey to basically test the water. I think we should avoid trying to see it as a vote and, majority wins and minority loses out, but as a way of trying to see where we're coming together on some of these issues, or basically see where we have two opposing views and something that, for example, the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group has done is has used the survey as a way to develop consensus recommendations, but also identify those areas that are actually two opposing views and use that as a way of saying, okay, that's what we're going to put in the initial report and put that out for public comment so people can actually weigh in on where we are split through the middle on some of these issues or where we have a majority view or maybe a minority view or an alternate view. As a way of trying to come to some kind of recommendations or things that we would like to put out to a broader audience. So that was the initial thinking a bit behind it, and has been, you know, tested a bit in other working groups as well.
Thank you, Marika. Barry?
Thanks, Alan. This is Barry Cobb. I definitely agree with everything that Marika just said. It's definitely well time that we start to put a stick in the sand to see where we stand on a lot of these issues. And I definitely like the form of the survey, and again, just to connect with what Marika was saying, it's been very effective in the RAP group. I guess, if anything, I wish it was something that we did earlier in our process. The only suggestion that I would have for this survey as we review through them is I would think that we might want to consider the possibility of trying to make this a multiple-choice version. And the main reason that I state that, you know, some of these questions are structured as a yes-no, and that's going to be very helpful. Others, there probably may be four or five probable answers. The reason why I suggest this is that it'll help with the trying to quantify some of the sub-questions within each of these. And that's all that I'll add. Thank you.
And I think that's essentially why we wanted to go through it in this way, to try to identify the things. Marika and I have done our best to identify what the issues are. Whether it's a yes, no, and if yes, then some other question or some other form, I think is exactly why we want to look at it right now. If you just give me 1 second, I am going to try to print out a copy so I can scribble on it as we go along.
Okay. I've got my hand up, so I'll take the mic. Cheryl Langdonor here. Just following on from what Barry said, I also suggested when we were doing our first pass review, and I got no argument back from Michele, so I'm assuming he agrees with me, that we could also set this up in a what we look at are a set of drill downs, I guess. So if you answer no, then you just skip through to the next part, and if you answer yes, then those sub questions come up. If you're doing it that way, you can also allow for expansion or comment, which shifts the metrics somewhat, but does at least mean that people who just have a firm and hard yes, no, or not interested in that response can do it at that level. But people who want to get some sort of other information or explanation in can also put some comment into it. The only other thing I was going to go back to what Barry said, and that's his wish that this sort of thing had been done earlier, just for reference point, if this sort of thing is done earlier in a work group activity, it would need to be repeated throughout the process, because the whole concept of having an interactive development towards a consensus outcome involves us all listening to each other and hearing and perhaps even modifying our views. So early would be good, but really only as a benchmark to compare any general agreements. Otherwise, we just put things out to vote and we don't need work groups at all.
There may be some merit in that. He said facetiously. All right. Seeing no hands up, then I would suggest we go through it. And since there are five basic sections in line with the charter questions, I would suggest we look at each of them to the extent it will fit on one screen, each of them one at a time, and get input from the group as to whether, as it stands right now, is fine, how we should change it to end up with results which are likely to be more meaningful and more useful to us. The first one is questions whether adequate opportunity exists for registrants to redeem their domain, their expired domain. My understanding of these issues is not do we believe the registrant is being informed, but if the registrant decides they want to renew after expiration, is there adequate opportunity? The first question was, should there be a right to recover? Currently, although most registrars allow recovery under varying conditions, there is no right to it, and there is no requirement that a registrar provide anything past the date of expiration. So, is it reasonable to ask the question? I would say I don't think we can proceed without asking that question. But the outcome is, of course, different. Not seeing any hands. The follow-on question is, if there is a right, should there be a time frame under which this is allowed? If you look at the current situation, most registrars, again, allow something in the order of 30-plus days under which it can be redeemed under some circumstances or other. Cheryl, you had your hand up, then changed your mind?
Just briefly, what I was just going to point out at that first decision node is, depending on what happens with what this work group says, we need to make sure that information and outcome gets back to the RAA work groups, both A and B, as well as the ALAC Aspirational Registrant Rights Charter Group.
Can you explain further why?
Because
within
the wish list of, I think it's RAA Group B, is a specific request for such a right to exist. So if this work group, in its wisdom, decides that the right is affirmed, that and would be of looking at some form of change or process to review how that right can be established, then, i.e. what we're doing in the PDP process, then that's important information for those other work groups to know about.
Yes, certainly. I have no reason to believe that we will not keep them up to date and they will not continue to watch that. But are you saying that if we decide that such a need is there, that they have to implement it?
No, but it would perhaps be important that they know who is going to implement it.
Well, I'm working on the assumption.
Otherwise, it will end up in an aspirational document,
okay,
or it'll end up being worked on in multiple places, and that's not productive.
I'm working on the assumption that if we decide something is needed and it is within our scope to recommend it, then we will indeed do that. But
and they're making
maybe
the assumption that that's the case.
Okay.
Kaylee?
I can't really understand why we're discussing this. I mean, the thing is that there's plenty of crossover between this working group and the RAA working groups. So, I mean, if I'm on an RAA working group call and something in relation to something that we're already discussing within this work group comes up, I'm going to say something along the lines of, oh yeah, we're already looking at this in the other working group. So, you know, I can't see why this is a problem.
That's fine with me. Cheryl, anything else?
No.
Okay, just for our information, Marika, in terms of the kind of interactive survey that Cheryl was talking about earlier, that you only see question B if you answer yes to question A, is that something within the scope of the survey tool we normally use?
This is my guy. I would need to look into it, but I would imagine so.
Okay.
That's possible. And otherwise, it's very easy as well for people to click through. I mean, in the survey, you have different screens, so you know, people don't need to fill it in, even if, you know, if they've answered no, they can just otherwise click through. So, but I'll look into that.
Okay. I mean, the other side of that is I sort of like to see here's a fifth of the questionnaire, and I know I'm through it, as opposed to something that there's no real indication of how long it's going to go on. But Ron, you had your hand up.
Yeah, on a couple of items. This asks, should there be a right? And I'm wondering if it's not more a case of saying, is there already an implied right? Otherwise,
well, there is not right now.
So, right.
And
secondly, I agree with your concept of not hiding questions would be, and in some cases, it might be even useful to say yes, no, or I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other, because someone with a weak opinion or almost no opinion would sway over on the other side.
Okay, noted. Okay, so assuming if you answer yes, then the question is, what should the minimum time frame? Next question is, what should the minimum time frame be that the registrant is guaranteed that they can recover a domain name? Now, that is one I think that we for this group we may not need anything additional. If we were to go into a further group, there certainly needs to be some constraint. The issue of if a registrar has paid for the renewal and chooses to simply let it go and not continue the process, is there how do we make sure that we're not putting a financial burden on registrars by adding this? And I can think of a number of ways that we could do this. Of course, we could put the financial burden on registrars. That's within our right, but I think we need to consider that as we go along. The next question, I believe, is not dependent on an answer to A, but the question is, should the cost of recovery after expiration be clearly defined? That is not set by ICANN, but something which the registrant has an expectation of understanding what it is. Comments? No. Should the RAE be able to recover his or her domain name for the same cost that a normal renewal prior to expiration during this minimum time frame? In other words, should a registrar be allowed to add a premium to this price? Jeff?
Yeah, I think I'd like to ask if we can – I understand the question. I'd like to ask if we could just reword it, taking out the words like normal versus – I mean, I think you could say as, the standard renewal price or – what you had said as your definition or your explanation was actually clearer than the actual question.
I hope someone caught it.
Yeah, so I would just ask if we could sort of reword that. So it's
can we ask you to put
Let me think about that. Right, I had it in my head. I'll think about that right now, and I'll put it onto the chat.
Okay. I mean, I think the intent of the question is, should a registrar be allowed to change the price post expiration and pre-expiration.
There you go. That's it. Should they be able to charge a premium for a renewal post expiration? How's that?
Now, we may want to have some subtlety in that, given that if you look at the registrar survey, we have some registrars who charge the same price for the first 10 days, but then increase the price after that.
Right, and then you know what? I'm not sure
how we get that granularity in the survey and make it understandable. I'm not sure.
You know, now hold on. Before I even go further, I'm just thinking back on this, and I'm just let me just step back. And are we allowed to dictate on what prices people would charge? I don't know if we're how that rolls into that. So that's just another consideration before we even send this question on that. I don't know if maybe someone on staff can respond to that.
Well. We certainly can't dictate the price. Can we dictate that the price doesn't change and of a certain period of time? I'm not sure.
Hey, Alan, it's Margie. Can I respond?
Sure.
Sure, yeah. I actually have my hand up raised for the same concern. I have a concern about making a suggestion that we would dictate price, and price is one of those areas of antitrust that we typically want to stay away from. I don't know how else you could rephrase this. Perhaps, perhaps I can check with the legal counsel on what they'd be comfortable with.
Before you do that, McKaylee has his hand up, and then I have a thought or question I want to ask.
I mean, the only thing I would say, McKaylee, is I'd agree with Jeff. I mean, be careful about. I mean, something I haven't really noticed, but Jeff raises, and it's a very valid point. Words like normal are quite loaded. And, you know, if you word things using certain terms, you're starting from a particular standpoint as opposed to simply soliciting an objective opinion.
Okay, just for the record, I don't know whether I worded that question or Marika did, but looking at it now, removing the word normal, I think it loses nothing.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that you did it or anybody did it.
No. I'm just saying I don't know if I did it or Marika did it, but looking at it right now on the screen, removing the word normal, I don't think loses anything in its meaning. So I don't think we don't need to debate it very long.
It's just a general thing, though, with regards to
Understood.
Some of these things. I mean, the thing is that from our perspective as registrars, you know, if you ask me, if you start putting things about normal and premium and things like that, it's got a certain kind of emotive underlying semantic, which, you know, I understand what the spirit of your question is, but I think, you know, that's...
Point made, and keep on calling us on it.
Don't worry, I will.
I was going to ask a more general question: is this really important? If the answer to C is yes, that is, it should be clearly defined and visible, and everyone knows what the game is. Does it matter if it's different from pre-registration, from pre-expiration?
Alan, can I respond to that? I think
sure.
that's an excellent point, and I think you're right. I agree with that. If it's clear,
well, I didn't answer the question. I just asked.
Oh no, I'm saying that you know because the idea is saying that if it's there or if it's not, that as long I'm trying to repeat what you had just said, stating that hey, if I don't think this question is necessary because if it's clearly defined, and I think the goal. You know, what we're sort of leaning into is that people want it to be clearly defined as it is required in the RGP pricing now, that it might not be necessary for D.
Okay.
I hope that makes sense. I was agreeing with you on your point that I don't think it's necessary.
Thank you. It strikes me that in light with what I think Barry said, but it may have been someone else earlier, that this is the kind of question where the possible options might be yes, no, I don't really care, or it doesn't really matter.
If C answers D in many respects, if it's clearly defined, then the answer to D is largely irrelevant.
Yeah, my inclination is to leave questions like this in, certainly at the phase where we're answering them, but make sure that the options include things like don't care. If everyone in this group, regardless of what side you're on, basically says it's not all that important if the answer to C is yes, then if we do this survey in any further group, it probably won't show up at all. I don't think anything's lost by keeping it in here, as long as the answers give a reasonable range. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. In the hypothetical case that indeed we would go down a route that we say there should be a certain period of time during which the RE should be able to recover their name. I mean, of course, if a registrar say, well, you know, I really think that's a ridiculous requirement, so I'm just going to put a ridiculous price on it so that the name won't be recovered by the RE because they find it too expensive and, you know, I can monetize it or whatever my other plan is for it. So the link with that question would be, if you indeed give a right to recovery, would it be reasonable as well then to allow that renewal to take place for a certain amount of time for the same amount as can be done prior to expiration? That I guess would be the reason why you might want to include that question, or why it's linked maybe to that initial question of should there be a right for the RE to recover his or her domain in that case.
Of course, if when you express it like that, my inclination would be And if the registrar wants to charge 50% more or 70% more, fine, as long as it's well documented. But they shouldn't be able to charge 400% more or 4,000% more or whatever it is. Michaeli?
Well, see, this is the problem, Alan. If you start prescribing how much how much is reasonable and everything else, you're going down a very nasty rabbit hole. I mean, should the RE have the right to recover the domain name after it has expired? You'll probably find a certain degree of consensus on that. Should the cost for recovery be clearly defined? Again, I don't see a huge issue with that. If you can start getting into, you know, reasonable costs and, you know, 200%, 300%, well, 200% is okay, but 210% isn't, you know, where are you going to draw the line? It's something I'd be very wary of.
Okay. I would suggest that we go ahead with a question like this, but we reword it to rephrase it in terms of should there be any constraints on what that clearly defined fee is in relation to the origin, to the regular annual fee. And I'm not using the word regular as a code word. I just can't think of the better one right now. And again, you know, if the answers that come out of this, there's good uniformity across this board, then we have the answer we're looking for. And if not, then it's clearly something we need to further discuss.
Alan,
Ron.
Alan, can you also ask Siva to type more explanation on his points there, because I'm getting confused.
I haven't actually read them. Sorry, I'm trying to focus on what people are saying.
Sorry to
interrupt. You've just said it. I presume he's heard it, though. Siva, if you can elaborate more on what you're saying, because there are at least some people who are not following you completely.
I specifically was asking it for typing, because it's often very difficult to get good audio clarity from Siva's lines, that's all.
Understand.
Sorry,
yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, but Ron is on first.
Okay. Yep. Okay. This is Ron. My only point would be that if the agreements are subject to change by just simply posting a change on the web of the registrar, then it doesn't seem that you're informed at the time you do it. So I think that you almost have to go into that area of what's reasonable. Because it could be changed by a registrar who says, well, I'm low on money this month, so I'm just going to make it 4,000%.
But are you suggesting that the fee, if the fee is controlled, it's based on what you originally spent on it, not what the market is today?
No, what it was at the time that you signed up for the domain name. If you renewed it.
Which could be 10 years ago.
Yeah, uh-huh. If the registrar has a right to have his agreement respected when ICANN wishes to change it, and ICANN has to wait until that expires, shouldn't the registrant have a similar position?
I'm not sure I want to go down that road, but... I guess the best we can do is when we word the question, the final survey, Marika and I will try to give an opportunity for open-ended answers in this particular one. Margie?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the choice of words. I think you suggested the word constraints, and that, in the context of price, seems problematic. Is there, you know, perhaps a different way to phrase the concern for that question?
It's problematic in the sense that it may be construed at setting absolute values, or
yeah.
Okay. Well,
And so, I mean, the way it was originally worded didn't seem to quite say that, but when you use the word constraints, it starts getting in that gray area. I mean, it's hard
okay.
to tell. Exactly what.
I mean, the original one said same cost or not, and I think we've gone into an area where we may need more granularity, but your concern is noted, and I presume you'll see the final version before we send it out. If we do anything naughty, tell us.
Okay.
Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. My point is actually in relation to question C, because I'm just realizing that we might want to rephrase that a little bit as well, and instead of saying that the cost of recovery should be defined in the registration agreement, it could be as well a link to that information, because otherwise you might be in a situation where a registrar, I guess, has to update its registration agreement every time they change the cost. So if you make it in such a way that information is easily found or linked through, I don't know if that's, you know, because I understood as well from some of the comments on the registration agreement that, you know, sometimes general language is used because it's complicated and expensive.
No, your point is well taken. We need to word it to make sure we're not saying it has to be in the agreement as opposed to findable, identifiable, whatever. Shiva?
Hello.
Yes, let's see if we can hear you.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Hello.
Yes,
okay.
We can hear you. Let's see.
Okay.
Try.
Someone said that if we agree on a registration agreement, there is no need to define a minimum time frame and no need to go beyond that. But my point was that this needs to be discussed, and the agreement, registration agreement, should include a definition of a minimum time frame for normal renewal at the same cost. So this is one point. The other point is relates to the consensus policy. So if by consensus policy you mean an agreement across registrars for a pricing structure for renewal, then I would suggest that such a consensus be there within a registry, but not across all registrars, across all registries. That is because there are different types of domain names. For example, if there is an agreement, there could be an agreement that all .com names will be renewed at no more than 50% premium during this period and no more than 100% premium during this period. But when it comes to new GPLDs, there are some of the new GPLDs are premium names, and one or two names could be sold even initially at $100 or more per name. And if there is one such premium domain, then it is not required to say that the renewal cost should be limited. It can be much more. It can be 200%, 300%, or 500%, or
okay.
It can be a reserved sum of $1,000 for such premium name. That's what I meant when I said that I would be opposed to a consensus policy across the domains, but not within a...
Okay. Let me answer some of what you said. The first part, you were giving your answers to the survey. Right now, we're just trying to decide on what the questions are. Once the survey is finalized, you will have an opportunity to give your opinions on the questions. In terms of consensus policy across registries, we are looking at the possibility of recommending a consensus policy which would cover all GTLD registries. We do not have the option of picking and choosing which registry it applies to. in any given registration, a registry agreement with ICANN, there is the opportunity to negotiate exemptions based on the specific needs of that registry. That's not our that is not our business. And in terms of renewal fees, no one is talking here about what the fee is for renewing a domain name. We are simply looking at whether the fee should be different after expiration than before expiration.
Are you getting answers to the last question?
We're not looking at answers at all right now. We're looking at the questions.
Okay. I will get into answers. Okay.
Any other thoughts on questions A through D before we go on to E? Helen.
I had understood that ICANN did not get involved in the pricing that registrars charge, and there could be a problem with D in that since the prices charged to the registrar by the registry going up every year, we could get into some problems where just at that time the price goes up again. Therefore, the registrar may have to take a loss because of this policy. I would actually recommend that question D just be removed.
Noted. I think we have ICANN staff who will tell us if we're going into a territory that we shouldn't go into. But I don't believe we're, you know, there was a suggestion from Ron that the fee that any additional fee charged post expiration be related to the original fee charged. That is certainly something which can be suggested. I would not suspect it's going to be a universally accepted concept.
But would this mean that the registrar may have to take a loss if the registry is now charging more?
I don't. I'm not saying anyway that the registration fee shouldn't go up in a world where prices go up. All we're talking about is if it expires on March 10th, how does the price differ from March 9th to March 11th?
If the registrar is charged more because there's been an update in the fees that the registrar pays to the registry, then it may go up anyway. And the registrar has no say in that because they have to recover costs. So by saying that it has to be the same as before, you are limiting the registrar's inability to increase fees
you're suggesting this is a case where the registry raises their price on March 10th.
That's an example. In some cases, this may happen. There may be other reasons why it costs more. It may be expensive for other reasons.
I think we've decided that we will have a very open-ended answer answer possible for D, and I would suggest you express it at that time. Michele?
Actually, Helen does raise an interesting point. VeriSign, for example, are upping the price that they're charging registrars.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 1st of July.
Right.
For both COM and for Net. The point she raises is a very valid one. I mean, the other one which people tend to forget about is that, you know, registrars have three fees to pay before they pay their staff or anything else. There's the fee to the registry, which, as I already said, it can go up, and I'm yet to see them actually go down. There's a per transaction fee to ICANN, plus there's the variable fee to ICANN. And the variable fee to ICANN, that's based on the ICANN budget divided by the number of registrars, yada, yada, yada. So, I mean, that the fee there could take a massive jump from one year to the next. So it is something just to bear in mind.
Cheryl?
Thanks, Alan. Just while that conversation was going on, I wondered whether or not restructuring the specifics of question D, 1D, to a multiple choice which I think Barry raised earlier, so we could propose a couple of scenarios. No change in cost, and use terms cost plus premium, cost plus, you know what I mean? To sort of, so it bundles in the fact that costs do change.
Well, maybe I'm reading too much into what we've already said, but if the cost, if Registrar X is selling a domain for $10 right now, and as of tomorrow it's $11, then it's certainly not unreasonable for the renewal fee to be $11, even if it's post expiration. You know, I'm talking about the worst possible case, the fee goes up just at over the boundary of expiration. I don't think anyone would consider it unreasonable for the registrar to charge that extra dollar.
But Alan, to me it seems that part of the sticking point is the way that question is written in terms of renewal prior to expiration during this minimum time frame. What we need to do is structure a question which recognises that that is considered when that question is being asked.
I thought we had already decided to do that one open-ended, and you know, we'll do our best to cover these options. Ron?
So, yeah, just a small point, but if the registry charges a higher fee after the domain has gone into auto-renew, it's already been renewed at the original price. So I don't think it can happen in post-recovery, post-expiration recovery, because it's been auto-renewed.
I get the feeling we're talking about a very minor thing and spending a lot of time on it. And we've gone through half the meeting. Can we accept that there'll be another iteration of this question, and if it's really broken, then people will say so on email?
Yeah, this is Jeff. That was my exact suggestion. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Shiva, do you still have your hand up, or is this a new one? Down. Okay, question E1E, should the redemption grace policy be adopted as a consensus policy? If you remember correctly, the RGP was introduced around about 2002. It was never put in as a consensus policy for either registries to implement it or for registrars to offer it. I believe pretty much all of the GTLD registries have implemented it, the ones that where it made any sense. I think Dot Museum may be an exception to that. And many registrars offer it. Many say they do not offer it, and in fact do offer it, and presumably some actually do not offer it. The question is, should this be a requirement that is all new registries do offer it, and we're talking about potentially a lot of new registries with new GTLDs, and should a registrar be required to offer it? And remember, this only kicks in if the domain is actually deleted. Is there any reason not to ask the question, do we need more granularity, or should it just be a simple yes-no? Okay. Question two. Whether expiration-related provisions in typical registration agreements are clear and conspicuous enough. Part A is, are you of the opinion that expiration-related provisions in typical registration agreements are clear and conspicuous enough, which essentially asks the full question. Jeff?
I'm sorry, this question, this was a real issue with this because I wasn't sure what we were driving at. Let me just explain why. That's why I was asking who the audience was, because we're asking whether, in typical registration agreements are clear and conspicuous enough. So first, I don't know what a typical registration agreement is. And two, are people in the group going to review registration or whatever typical registration or any registration agreements to make sure they're clear and conspicuous? I'm really at a loss to this question. Who's going to answer it and how and why and what typical is? So I don't know how this question makes sense to me.
Well, the word typical is in the charter question. I believe, anyway, since it's in bold, I think Marika just copied it right out of the charter. So to some extent, we are stuck with it because it was approved by council, assuming my assumption is correct. Marika, is that indeed correct, that this is the wording of the charter question?
Yes, this is Marika, this is correct.
Okay.
Okay,
I don't see how we can avoid asking the question.
I don't know how we could answer the question. Who's going to answer it? I mean,
well,
is everyone here going to read? Do we have a standard set of typical registration agreements for the people to review before they can respond to it?
Well, we do have comments. We do have Marika's analysis of the 9-10 registrars who comprise a large percentage of the registrations that are done. Cheryl?
This is one of the pivotal questions which led me to suggest that, and agree with Mikkeli, that, you know, a little bit of dumbing down and some of these questions will be really useful to ask beyond this group. I'm at a little bit of an impasse. My response here, we definitely better have comment because... Yeah, some of these responses would, to all honesty, from my point of view, come back with, I have no bloody idea, I haven't read them all, nor do I intend to. You know, that's the sort of thing you'll get from me on an A. But if I want to find the temperature of part of the ICANN community by asking either some GNSO constituencies or some of our at-large structures what their view is on that, I find it much easier to answer.
Well, certainly, if you have any better wording for us, the one that's going to ask ourselves.
I'm just not sure that for this group, what we have as a reference point is the review that staff has provided us with. And we're asking ourselves for an opinion. It's very subjective anyway.
Yes, it is certainly subjective. Jeff, your hand is still up.
Sorry, I just muted myself. So, you know, I think here's the point. What I was saying is that if people here say, okay, I'm going to read, you know, whatever Marika went through, you know, the registration agreement, and saying, am I in the opinion, is it clear, conspicuous? No, this agreement was not, and then point to it, and then, yes, I agree. You know, we can't just say, oh, based upon anecdotal evidence, I think it's not clear. You know, it just unless we have the specific ones or a group to look at and somebody pulls a cross-section, that I'm not going to argue what's typical, but people have to read it before they can answer. They can't go by someone else's synthesis of what they think.
All right.
Or then why, then they're not even surveying us.
I have a suggestion, but let's go through the speaker list first. Mikkeli?
I echo Jeff and Cheryl. I mean, if you ask me this question, I can't answer it. I don't know. Jeff, can you answer it? I think he already answered that anyway. I mean, we can't really answer it because we're not going to read every single registration agreement. We can only go on anecdotal evidence. We can only go on maybe things that we've come across ourselves. But even that, it's very, very it's beyond subjective. I mean, it's in kind of crazy territory.
I assume MDP is Michael.
That would be I. Perhaps a rewording of this question to address the concerns by Jeff, Mikkeli, and others is, are you aware of the rights and obligations regarding renewal or domain name renewals in agreements that you've entered into? So instead of asking them to opine on 1,000 agreements, we're just asking people that perhaps our domain name registrants, are you aware of the rights and obligations regarding renewal terms? And are you aware of them, and have they been clear and conspicuous? So we're asking a person who perhaps has a domain name that is entered into a contract, have they been clear, conspicuous, are you aware of them? And we're only asking them that knowledge with regard to domain names and, if you will, agreements that they've entered into. We're not asking them to opine on 1,000 contracts.
Okay, I have another variant. Do people want me to give it now before the rest of the speaker list or go through?
Go ahead, Alan.
Okay. If you look at the next question, is what measures could be taken to facilitate understanding of the related provisions by registrants? That one, I believe, is the correct tone that we're looking for. So the question isn't, are registration agreements clear? It's, do we believe registrants understand the terms and conditions related to renewal post expiration? Because that's really that's the question that we're trying to fix in the next question, in the following questions. And I think the wording there is not, are the agreements clear, which, as a number of you have pointed out, is a rather difficult thing to answer, but do we believe there's a problem that we have to solve? And that's somewhat different than what Michael just suggested, because he was suggesting from your personal experience, and on that, for better or worse, we're here to solve the ills of the world if they are there regarding expiration, not just on our own personal behalf. Okay, let's go back to the speaker list. Barry?
This is Barry, I think. I think definitely here what we're talking about is the audience. You know, we need to go back, continually remind ourselves to ask that question. The question of, A, as an example, I agree it does need to be removed. Me, as a member of this working group, I can honestly say that, registration agreements are probably not clear and conspicuous, more to the case that they're definitely lack zero consistency. And why I know this is I have taken a cross-section of about 20-some-odd different registrars and analyzed sections of those agreements where they contained expiration provisions and renewal provisions. And certainly none of them are the same, and certainly you can pick out some that are best of breed versus kind of just meeting what could be considered an average baseline. So perhaps, that's something to look at in terms of how we structure this question, because to me, I honestly could answer that and say, no, they aren't clear and conspicuous. But I do agree with Jeff and everybody else, it's not the right question to be asking. And then where you were starting to go, Alan, I believe, and when we start getting into the B and C part of it, those are certainly more the questions that, again, when we consider the audience, we should be asking. If we're asking this amongst us to gain consensus, to start forming consensus about a direction we want to head, that's great. But, do we also, if we do want this external audience again to review this, then the kind of how the question that Mr. Plage was talking about is framed for those that kind of outside of the group.
Just to be clear, what we are talking about today is for us. It is clear that if we were to go out to an outside audience, and that's still an if, these questions would have to be reworded, clarified, whatever. Jeff?
Okay, so then, just to reiterate then, question A, we can't answer it specifically within the group, but it doesn't help us really gain consensus on anything anyway. So I say we strike it. Thank you.
Jeff?
Okay, so just two parts of this. One, I wanted to respond to Mike Plage's suggestion, which actually I think that's an okay question relating to you, the person individually when you went to sign up, are you aware of it when you did it? And then I think just an add-on, if we were going to do that, an add-on question is, did you look for that information when you were registering it, or did you care at that time? Because, just because it's not flashing in your face, you might not have looked for it or might not have cared, because that's a difference. That's a big dividing line, because you have to know if the person looked for it. And so I'm okay with the first part. If we add in that second part, I'm okay with that. saying if they looked for it. And then the second thing, Alan, I think your question, your point here, and then for part B, I'm just saying if you answer no, what measures could or should be taken to facilitate understanding? That's that question, the wording on that is very leading because what we're saying is you're saying that there's a difference between clear and conspicuous versus understanding what it is. If it's clear and it's out there, the person might – that's the difference between clear language. So I just want to be clear on that. And then the other part is that we still can't say what we think registrants. We can only – if we're taking the survey, it's what we see and what we believe for ourselves, not what we think of registrants, what they know.
Well, I guess I differ on that last question, but I was suggesting that whatever wording we use, that if the answer to A is yes or no, that there need, if the answer to A is there needs to be something fixed, then the questions following it should be the same thing. Right now we're talking apples and oranges, and that clearly is not a, not reasonable. Cheryl? Or Michael, is your hand back up? Mike Pelagio, okay, Cheryl.
I just wanted to establish very clearly exactly who we think the target audience is, because to be honest, if we've established now, as you just indicated, Alan, that for this survey in these questions, the target audience is us, then that's a lot of what we've discussed is irrelevant. In today's meeting.
I thought that was a premise that we started with.
A lot of what we discussed is how worthy having the answers of this to these questions would be from beyond this group, and we need to maybe reverse 3 and 2 in our agenda, if that's the case.
My understanding from when we started off was we are looking at a questionnaire, at a survey for this group. It would need, with the de facto statement that it would be need to be changed if we go to anywhere else. I thought that was the premise, but maybe we've drifted on somewhere else.
Well, what is everyone's view on that?
You're suggesting that we put a pause on agenda item 2 and go on to 3.
Please.
Okay. I can give my opinion and then hands up afterwards for others. Marika, you want to speak first? Go ahead.
Doesn't matter what. I'm happy for you to go first, Alan.
Okay. My belief is, number one, we need this work group to address the issues. The other audiences that I could see addressing it at, and said the issues, not necessarily verbatim these questions, is there's a number of other working groups right now that are looking at some very similar things. I suspect many of us would be on those working groups and many of the people on those working groups would be on this one if there wasn't a finite amount of effort one could put into ICANN-related things. And I think the people on the RAA groups and the IRTB groups, for instance, are moderately knowledgeable on these issues. We might need to reword the questions and put some clarity and some enhancement to them, but I think those people are in a position to address the questions. I would like to see it going to a wider audience than that, and clearly if we did that, there would need to be some rewording and additional clarification, additional enhancement, additional dumbing down. I'm not trying to define the exact words to make sure that people understood the questions we were asking and that the answers had some meaning to them. That is my perception. But I thought we were talking in this particular meeting about the first version of the questionnaire where we're dealing with knowledgeable people who would not need a hell of a lot of explanation, an awful lot of explanation, excuse the language. Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika, and I think it was definitely using a purpose for this group to go through such a survey to try to determine where the group stands and see if we can come to consensus or agreement on certain recommendations, or at least a clear view where people stand. I do have some concerns about sending this out to other working groups at this stage of the process, because to me it wouldn't be really clear what value that would add. I mean, it's for this working group to come to recommendations and come to agreements, not for other working groups to decide on that. They might not have had the benefit of all the discussions that this group has had, you know, the registrar survey, all the discussions. However, I would see a value if this group, at the end of the day, comes to an initial report where it does have certain options that it doesn't have a clear consensus around yet, but would like to get the, you know, public at large input. Then a tool like a survey, where you really want to have yes-no questions or people choosing for one option over the other, that might be an efficient way of getting public input. And in that way, you could also target then those working groups specifically that you think have, you know, further knowledge about these issues. But I'm a bit concerned if you open this up to certain working groups, I'm not really sure what you're going to do with that information at this stage of the process, with not having a clear idea yet which direction the group wants to go or what recommendations the group would like to put on the table for broader consideration. But that's, you know, just my two cents.
Michele?
Alan, just humor me a small bit. Aren't these questions in many respects the charter questions for this working group?
They are they are driven off of the charter questions, with adding some level of granularity to try to determine what we think we need to do. Yes.
Okay. Well, based on the fact that these are in many respects the questions that we as a group have been asked, I mean, surely the fact that we can't actually answer them would actually resolve this working group's work. I mean, if the question, you know, whether expiration-related provisions and typical registration agreements are clear and conspicuous enough, if we as a group can't actually answer that question, well, then in that respect, maybe that's the working group's work is done. Because we can't actually say, because we don't know. Now, the thing that we can take away from the entire thing is saying, well, you know, based on the discussions that we've had, we realize that certain provisions may need to be clearer, or that people may need to pay more attention to those things. But, you know, what's the point of sending it out anywhere else if we, as people who have been asked to actually look at this, as Marika rightly pointed out, we can't answer the question? And the fact that we can't answer the question is an answer in itself.
Well, I think that particular question we can't answer, because I think that question was indeed not worded very well.
Yeah, but you see what I'm driving at, though.
If the questions are truly unanswerable, then we have been given charter which we cannot address, and we need to fold up shop and go home.
There you go.
On the other hand, I'm not convinced that that's the case.
Why?
I don't think this group should walk away from the overall task because the charter questions may not have been worded as well refined as they could have been. The amount of effort that was put into writing the charter was not at that level. I mean, the charter questions came right out of the issues report, and Marika can speak to that. I think that there's an intent in the charter questions and in the issues, in the questions raised by the issues report, which may or may not have been expressed well in the wording of the questions, that doesn't alter the intent. Marika?
Yeah, it doesn't, Marika. I think it's already fair to say that we can't answer this question, because I think, as well, based on the research that we've looked at on the registrar survey, and you know, I think we've all looked at the issues report, where we've looked at, as well, different provisions that are contained in typical registration agreements. I think, you know, we're asking here for an opinion, and I think people can state whether they feel that those, I mean, you might, you know, argue what is clear, what's conspicuous, but I think if we go here on people's opinion that you think that that's clear and understandable, I mean, I think we've already spoken many times as well, saying, look, these registration agreements are legal agreements. Maybe, indeed, you know, digging deeper into this and saying, look, it's not, you know, it shouldn't need to be clear and conspicuous, as long as that information is maybe contained somewhere else in a clear and conspicuous way, and it's easy to find for people. I mean, you might take the questions as well in a different direction if you feel indeed that that's not answering the question. But I think on the basis of discussions we had, you know, I at least had a feeling that there is some kind of consensus that there should be more education or more information available on you know, what it actually means. And, you know, we're talking as well, for example, on, you know, having an easy guide to the RAA. You know, you could have those provisions as well on that relate to expiration, for example, pulled out and you know, have those posted somewhere on registrar websites or things like that. I think we need to be able to think a little bit out of the box for these questions as well, and not just say, well, just because there's no definition of clear and conspicuous, I cannot answer the question.
I guess the question that I was trying to word on the fly, and that's always a bad thing to do in my mind, is the question is I think the question was really asking, are registrants provided with reasonable information in which to make informed decisions? And I don't know whether, I can't read Marika's mind and whether that was the intent of the question, but that's the way I read it. So it's not an issue of whether it's in the registration agreement or somewhere else, and it's not in trying to define clear in a purely quantitative way, but it's saying, are registrants reasonably in a position to understand what the rules are, or do we need to try to take action to make it clearer? And that was certainly how I read the question, not focusing on the words. Cheryl?
Okay. If we've established that we are the target audience, are we going to then establish that we are going to answer these questions individually? And if that's the case, we don't need to design very much more, because we can do a couple of carriage returns between each of these and just type away or say yes, no, or maybe, depending on what our personal opinions is. That done, and that can be done between now and the next meeting, how are we going to analyse this information? What are we going to do with it?
Well, I think, first of all, we do need to refine things. We've already heard that with the question as worded, most of the people, including yourself, would say, I don't have a clue, and walk away. And that's not a particularly useful outcome of this, I don't believe. And we also have to address the fact that we're not just talking about the people on this call. We're talking about the working group, which is a wider group than just the people who are here today.
I understand. I've used the terms working group all the time.
Okay. I think we do. We do with it what we do with other surveys. We enumerate the results and we try to understand: is there a feeling among a significant enough of the working group that we want to go forward in these things, or do we believe it's a non-issue?
Will this first run of metrics result in a paper report? Something happens with?
Marika?
This is Marika. What we've done in some of the other working groups, indeed, produce the results of the survey, clearly identify where people stand, and it gives an idea that leads them to further discussion to see, indeed, if a consensus view comes from those discussions. Try to put those down then in another survey where people then have an opportunity to debate to say, yes, I agree with the recommendation, no, I don't, I sort of agree, but I have some suggestions for changes. Or I want to propose an alternative view, and work in that way, trying to come at the end of the day with some kind of, you know, maybe some unanimous consensus recommendations, maybe some, you know, alternative views, strong support. I mean, that's at least, for example, how we worked in the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, where people were standing very far apart from each other at the start of that meeting group as well, and taking a lot of discussions to come closer. And I think the survey has helped to actually crystallize where people stand on issues. And as well, in the end of the day, if they're indeed opposing camps, well, why don't we put that into the initial report and say, look, this is where how far we've come. You know, tell us what you think. Do you think it's UA or UB that has it at the right end? Provide us with some further information why we should switch over from one side to the other. and at least have a way forward of presenting those results and hopefully come, you know, at the end of the day, if there's no consensus on the recommendations, that, you know, should go back to the council as well. I mean, I don't think it's the objective for this group to, you know, discuss into eternity trying to come to consent. But at the end of the day, you know, we might come back to the council and say, look, we couldn't come to agreement. We have two opposing views. Here you are. You know, you decide what you want to do with it. This is what the public said. This is what we think. And now it's for you to take it further.
I guess from my point of view, whether it's my ability as a chair or this subject, but we decided to come up with this kind of survey as a way to go forward, and now we can't decide how to go forward on the survey. And I'm not sure what that says. I'm not sure. I suspect it's nothing very good. And we see a show of hands. Do we continue on looking at the questions? We have 15 minutes left on the talk, on the meeting. We haven't looked at Mikey's things at all. What do you people want to do? Marika?
A suggestion I would have is to give people a couple of more days to look at the questions, you know, redline, provide suggestions to the mailing. Then maybe we just have a test run. I mean, I don't think there's any harm.
Sorry, then maybe we just have a
test run, just run the survey amongst the group and see where it leads us. I mean, people can put in if they have to answer a question, well, this question doesn't make sense, or I don't think we should be asking this question, or but maybe, you know, by just doing it, we'll see where we get, and maybe we see that we're actually, you know, closer on some of the issues that we currently think.
Should we be making the updates that we had decided to date first before we do that, or do we go ahead with the wording as we have right now? I mean, a number of issues we've decided need to be fixed.
Yeah, we can send out an updated version and give people another week to, you know, redline and you know, so we can have a kind of final version maybe for the next meeting, and, you know, people can really take out the right crucial issues, but maybe we should try to see this as well as a bit of an experiment to see if it gets us further instead of, you know, trying to solve every dot and comma in this exercise.
Agreement, Cheryl?
I would like to see us, if we've established that we're the target audience and these are, at least at the macro level, if not the minutiae, the types of questions we would like to seek our opinion on, that is the whole of the work group, that we get to the running of the survey much faster than the dotting of the I's, crossing the T's and wordsmithing of the survey, but that we make it clear for all those responding to the survey from the work group that comments on the understandability or otherwise of the question are of each question is also sought after, because it may be that some or all of these questions may be reworked for future use. Therefore, we're not spending another joint reading exercise couple of hours together where, you know, my understanding of typical and your understanding of typical are debated.
Barry?
Yes, this is Barry. And I'd just like to add on to that, for sure. I support that what Marika had stated, that, you know, let's kind of move forward with what we have. I ask in the next iteration that you send out to the list, let's go ahead and structure the questions so the ones that we do have a yes-no type of answer, that format is already there. And then per just the comment there that we, you know, for each question, we allow a line item or free form text of explaining exactly how that question, you know, should it be tossed, didn't understand it, which needs to be reworded this way, or, you know, nothing if they support the yes-no answer. At least that way, on this first take, we can quantify where we stand on the yes-no side and basically start to, again, the goal here is to for view A versus view B to start to materialize here, and that gives us our gauge. Thank you.
Cheryl?
just building on what Barry just said, the opportunity to have for each question or sub-question, is this clearly understood? You know, something like that.
All right. It sounds like our marching orders are to clean up whatever it's obvious that we needed to clean up that we've looked at so far. Add, make sure the what options we're allowing are reasonably open-ended, including an opportunity to say I didn't understand the question, and go ahead with it without spending additional meetings discussing it. Is that the general direction, or did I misunderstand? Barry?
I think to Marika's point that we would just give a couple of days for anybody to redline any some of the major stuff that they wanted to before we kind of turn on the switch to for everyone in the, amongst the working group to submit their answers.
Okay, so what I said allowing for a few days of comment in between and refinement if necessary because of those comments.
Yes, and I would like to add to this, because the exercise that we're going down, and I'll reiterate it from what I typed in the chat, again, has been a very useful exercise in the registration abuse policy group. It's really allowed us to see both sides and give clear direction of where we were heading. And to kind of add to that, I know we've kind of run out of time for Mikey's wish list and flowchart, because I think it's very important and compelling information, and I hope that we dedicate all of next call or most of it for reviewing that, because while I do support that we go through this survey, I believe that there's going to be several things that come out of the discussions around the flowchart wish list that will be appended to this survey, where we will need to, again, you know, kind of measure where the working group stands with these issues / solutions that we start to develop. Thank you.
All right, if there is no objection, then we have our marching orders. Question is, have we moved to meetings every 2 weeks, or are we trying to meet a week from now? No one cares?
I think
Vaughn?
We all care, Alan.
No, I know. I'm asking for opinion.
The weekly was where we were heading, and the skipping of a week was for other very good reasons, I thought.
Ron?
Yeah, I would like to meet next week in order to take up Mikey's wish list and flow chart.
All I wanted to hear was some opinions. If no one disagrees, we will meet in a week. Marika and I will try to have something out well before that for anyone to comment on, and we can launch the survey round about the time of the next meeting or sometime very soon afterwards.
It may be a good idea, Cheryl, here to do it soon afterwards, I would propose.
Yeah. As long as we don't spend the whole meeting talking about it next week. Marika, does your calendar allow that? I know you're starting to get rather busy with things in prep for Nairobi.
That should be fine.
Okay. Anything else on today's meeting, or do we adjourn a few minutes early? Seeing nothing else, I thank you all.
Bye.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay.
Bye.
Hey, Marika, are you still on?
Thank you.